gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
WOZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, oh God.
And welcome to the show. Today we have Chris and Jen. Say hi, Chris and Jen, or just Chris. Chris has the mic.
Hey, how are you?
Hey.
Welcome to the show. Today's, let me intro here. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And you're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And I am with Wombat et al.
The Wombat!
This is a live radio call-in show, and we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program, and generally on the station, as they are in rotation. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
I always knew that. How dare you ask me on live and put me on the spot like that?
Yeah,
it's like some sort of thing that involves space travel and stuff, right?
Right. How long has it been on the air now?
I don't know. Like 2.5 years, man. Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Try 7 years.
Oh, my gosh. We're at the big number 7.
That's right. It'll be August, I think, is when we go over 7. But we'll be talking about that, too, how you can listen to it and watch it and even interact by calling in on the TV show and getting your voice heard. By the way, this is a call-in radio show, and our phone number here is
865-333-5937.
And Wombat, would you like to introduce tonight's topic?
Sure. Happy to be on the show. Hey, what's up, Chris and Jen and Riv and Doubter 5, whole family's here.
Yeah.
Today's topic is frustration, or more or less how we can lead ourselves into frustrating situations when we try to tell people how their beliefs may be faulty. But really what we're trying to focus on is how to set up goals so that we don't become frustrated when we talk to people. And the reason why I brought this up was I was recently watching a podcast with a guy named Joe Rogan, who's from a variety of different things, news radio, UFC. He's also a comedian. But he has a podcast now, and he was on a show with Neil deGrasse Tyson, current head of, let's see, Space Academy, life sciences as well as consultant for NASA. And he has some shows for the cosmos, and he has a Star Talk radio podcast. Neil deGrasse Tyson's a pretty, prominent scientific figure. And he had Joe Rogan had him on a show, and they were talking back and forth, and Neil deGrasse Tyson got to a point where he was discussing how frustrated he got when he was talking about space travel to one of his friends. One of his friends didn't believe that man had landed on the moon. It was just a hoax. And so he said, you know, I'm willing to bring up evidence for you if that would change your mind. And the guy said, yeah, of course I'll change my mind if I saw some evidence. So at that moment, Neil deGrasse Tyson brought out a cell phone, showed him a picture of other countries' space programs that had high-resolution photos of our moon landing site. And even when presented with that information, Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about his friend and how he was unable to convince his friend with evidence at hand. And at that point, Neil deGrasse Tyson got really upset, and he essentially said he gave up on that person to Joe Rogan, and that was on the show. And when I heard that, I was kind of sad, because I remember of another seminar where there was a speaker talking about how you shouldn't give up on people. Really, you should look for opportunities to turn the conversation into a different direction. And for example, if you have a situation where a person didn't believe your evidence you had, that's an opportunity for them to show, or opportunity for you to show that person that their beliefs may not be evidence-driven, and then you can delve deeper there. It shouldn't be a frustrating situation if you can set realistic goals and what you expect out of a conversation. And I'd love to hear what you guys think about that.
Well, yeah. What I keep in mind is generally when I'm talking to somebody, it's either in public, in a meeting, or at Facebook. And I keep in mind that he's not the only person hearing my words. I mean, there are people that are on the fence that are listening and thinking about them, hopefully not only for the first time, but over the last time. But once they leave the conversation, they'll carry those words home with them and the conversation and think it over and build on it. Hopefully they'll come to a better conclusion than they had starting in.
I have a take on this as well. It's been basically situations
throughout life and here recently in conversations with friends who are ministers and so on. It's kind of the reversal. And I'm sure everyone's heard it before. You know, I have basically the situation will say is I have a glass of water and it'll fix all your problems and heal you and make you happy and all these things. Mm-hmm. And it's free, I'm giving it away. It's free water. And then so it's phrased to basically tap into the skeptical mind of yeah, sure, well, I might try it and see where the evidence leads me. But then you find out the water is the holy word, the scripture, or something. And it reverses, because then it's not just one thing. It's everything you're accepting, a part of it. But mm-hmm. that part isn't conveyed. It's insidious.
Right. Yeah. The thing about it is, you could say one phrase, something like, you have to accept Jesus into your heart or your soul will not make it into heaven and it will end up in hell. And right there in that one sentence that everybody is familiar with, there are at least five things that have never been demonstrated to be true or even exist. Christ itself is a title given to a being who is prophesied by the Jewish religion, and even the Jews themselves don't believe that Jesus was the Christ. The fact that your soul may not exist, and in my opinion doesn't, it's never been demonstrated to exist. Heaven and hell have never been demonstrated to exist. Sin has never been demonstrated to exist. There's just so many concepts in that one sentence that you've got to unpack before you can go any farther. And when they throw those all at you at once, you've got your work cut out for you to try to debunk all of that.
Sure.
Yeah, but it took them 5 seconds to throw it all at you, and you've got to address it all.
Do you have to, though? Well, I mean, that's the real point. Do you have to address all that in that conversation? Is that the goal you're setting up for yourself in that short talk that you're having with that person, or in that comment that you heard that you feel like you have to address, but not necessarily have to? If you set a realistic goal for what you can accomplish in a short talk with someone, particularly if you're trying to enlighten them or show them, hey, you may want to question your point of view a little bit more, or at least have a more skeptical outlook. If you set a more realistic goal, you can avoid a frustrating conversation where you're throwing facts at a person who may be dogmatically closed. And that's really the topic of the conversation. We're trying to figure out means of avoiding frustrating talks with people. And I think we are inclined to, because we have a position of rationality and logic, to throw out facts when we could be instead just inviting the person to introspectively look at why they believe something. And that doesn't require, you know, throwing out a list of, you know, really abstract concepts that are true but could be kind of like cumbersome in a conversation, or immediately discounting someone's, you know, beliefs. It could just be a question of, hey, I want you to have a comfortable time in front of me to ask yourself some uncomfortable questions. And then maybe we can unpackage some things. And I don't expect you to change your mind right now. But hopefully this is something that you'll consider in the future. Maybe next time we talk, we can continue from there. But for the most part, the goal is, I just want you to think about what you believe a little bit more. If you can get that, that's a huge leap forward. And I think that's one way to avoid frustration. What do you guys think?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned of why you, you know, asking the question of believing and why you believe that way. It's interesting, I think, because if you were to ask me, now I might be at a loss of the desired articulation, but if you were to ask me, prove gravity exists, I might be fumbling over where do I start. But I would eventually be able to go down demonstrations of how we see reliably every day that you go down the list of demonstrable, constant evidence demonstrations. If you ask someone, you know, what does God mean to you? Or what does any other religion mean to you? You ask 10 people, you get 10 different answers. And it's, when you dig deep enough, it just all comes down, what I find, it all comes down to, well, you just gotta have faith, and that's where it falls apart. Where does that stop you from believing in anything else? And that's where it kind of derails.
Yeah. Y'all feel free to jump in anywhere you want to. This is the first time on the radio show, you may be a little shy, but we're free-reeling, and just to jump in anywhere. The one problem I have with that, Wombat, is if somebody says something like that to me, and then I ask them to give me more details, I start talking about one thing and walking it back. It seems to me like I'm giving tacit approval to all the other things that he's mentioning that I'm not okay with. That he's not really going to leave with a proper picture of my take on the whole situation.
Sure, but is that important right now in that conversation? Does that lead you towards anywhere productive? For example, to address Riv's problem or concern, it kind of reminds me of an episode of I Love Lucy where they're at the chocolate factory. Lucy and Ethel got a part-time job, and they're at this candy line where they're wrapping chocolates, and it's coming out of a processing line, and they're doing it as fast as they can, but suddenly more and more chocolates keep spewing out. So they're wrapping them, and at a certain point, they can't keep up with all the stuff that's coming out of the machine anymore, but their attempt is basically just put the chocolate in their hats, put it down their clothes, put it in their mouths. And it's funny because they're dealing with a situation where they have a machine that's spewing out a bunch of chocolates, and they're trying to address each chocolate one at a time. And that's just not possible at a certain point. And it's a pretty funny comedy scene.
And then their boss comes in, and they lie to their boss, telling them that, yeah, we've got a handle. And they say, speed it up! Twice as hard to do.
But the thing is, when you're having a conversation with someone, you can run into the same situation if you're trying to address what is essentially the chocolates that are spewing out of their mouths. If they say four wrong things or four things that you know how you have a good counter to, and you try to address those four things, they may have four other things for each one of those four things, and next thing you're dealing with 16 issues. If you say, for example, if they say, oh, well, you know, I think the world's perfectly designed, and you're like, well, actually, evolution's a very complicated process, and you can actually see it's not a hallmark of design for complication. Simplicity is the hallmark of design. They're like, yeah, but I don't believe in evolution. It's different from macroevolution. That's two extra things you got to deal with now. It's like, well, actually, macroevolution and microevolution are the same thing. It's like, yeah, well, I saw a seashell fossil that was only like 2,000 years old, and that was with the dinosaurs. It's like, oh my gosh, like this rabbit hole doesn't end. And the more and more I deal with the chocolates, the less I'm dealing with the actual problem, which is the machine itself. If we can find a way to address the machine that's spewing out the chocolates rather than the chocolates itself, we're good. And in this analogy, the machine is the reasoning that they're using to hold their beliefs. Instead of tackling the exact symptoms of their belief system, which is maybe their illogical stances in some places, maybe some irrational positions in others, deal with the question itself of why are you convinced with this? Tell me, as a neutral party, what would be a convincing argument for me to also believe this as well? And then if we can talk about that between each other, maybe we can understand the foundation of why you believe it. 10 out of 10 times, you're going to have a situation where you'll give maybe like 4 or 3 random answers. Maybe it's like, oh, it's a personal revelation issue. Or I prayed and I needed a car, and then suddenly I got a car because I applied for it and I went to car shops and I found one exactly my price range. Or I rolled over in my car and I could have died, but I didn't die that time. Or I really, really love my mom and she loves me and she taught me about God. I can bring up multiple issues where those personal stories will lead to their faith, but you can take each of those down if you wanted to as you get towards the machine. If they give you a situation where their lives were saved by a car rolling over, you can say, hey, you know, if we were looking at the statistics of people who roll over in cars and we found that the chances of survival are pretty common among people of different faiths, would that still be a crux of your belief system? And then you can move on. Or if you say, hey, you believe this because your parents told you, has everything that your parents told you turned out to be true? And they're going to say no. And that's one thing that you can knock down. The basis of what you're trying to get to is what's the root cause of why they believe. And 10 out of 10 times, it will be a faith-related position. Once you get to faith, then you have a brilliant cornerstone to say, okay, so why are you using faith as the system to believe things? And ultimately, they'll talk about faith, let them define it however they want. But that's the conversation you want to have. You're not tackling the scientific points. You're not tackling the issues that they have with logic. You're trying to understand why they're using bad reasons to believe in things and good things. Or at least, why are they using faith, which as a theist, they mostly do use faith, to support ideas. And that's what you want to tackle. And that's a good goal to have in a conversation that's short, that can at least get them to consider why they do use faith. And you're not trying to change their mind at that point. You're just trying to give them an opportunity to look at faith in a different light.
Yeah, faith for sure is a cornerstone to religious beliefs. And a lot of people very strongly rely on it, and we need to take it down. Like I said, the only thing I really worry about is that if you don't talk about the other things, then you're just homing in on one thing. You're not talking about the community. You're not talking about the Bible. You're not talking about miracles. You know, there's so many things that you're just letting go until you get to the faith part. It's like we were talking about in the other radio show a couple weeks ago. You say, you ask people what their strongest reason for believing in God is, and then they tell you, and then you say, if I could disprove that reason, would you stop believing? And they always say no. It's not just one thing that's doing it. It's a web of things that hold religious belief together. Go ahead, Riff.
See, also, just two quick things to add to that I've found here recently, and it applies to it, is that there tends to be this sometimes blending of faith and knowledge revealed through faith, which is revealed through obedience, which is revealed through study, and so on and so on. So it's trying to encapsulate both of them, rather than saying, this is not knowing and believing, this is not believing and knowing based on observation, insofar as we can trust our senses. But there'll try to be this constant blending of, well, no, faith becomes knowledge, as revealed by, you know. And then so that
as entirely, it's repeated.
it takes away when I try to make other points with people about, I got caught up in this whole 20-minute thing with my friend about sin. He just casually mentioned it, and I said, let's stop at sin. What do you mean by that? And this long bargain argument back and forth about, well, sin is transgression against the law. Okay.
A transgression against the law. Well, God is the law.
Right.
So it's a transgression right. against God?
Right, that's what I was asking. He kept on saying, well, no, this is, you look at law in every single society around the world, and they have a different name for it, different languages. And I said, I get that. But what I'm saying is, in secular society, in secular rule, the word sin has no meaning.
Right.
It has a meaning, you understand it, but it has no valid purpose.
Yeah, it's like saying leprechaun.
It
has a concept, but it's not real. Dan Barker put it well. He says, sin is a concept sold to you by the church. And then the church comes around and tries to sell you a cure for the problem of its own making. And Dan Barker puts it succinctly as, would you buy a bandage from somebody who walked up to you and cut you in order to sell you a bandage? But I take offense to that. Not offense, really. I take umbrage with it because somebody came back to me and said, well, if he cut you hard enough, yeah, you'd buy the bandage. You got to stop. The thing about it is, somebody who comes up to you and cuts you is doing you real harm, real damage, and you need to repair for it. Sin is not real harm. It's not real damage. As a matter of fact, it's not real. And they're selling you an imaginary cure for an imaginary damage. So that's what needs to be addressed.
Right, it's those singular issues that can't get past, and that's the problem.
Right.
Is just
So here's the brilliant part. Again, you have to set a reasonable goal before you start the conversation to avoid the frustrating part. And the cool thing is, if I am setting a realistic goal, my goal isn't to completely change their mind and have them convert to atheism by the end of the talk. My goal is for them to get rid of the reasons that are bad, and or at least question them a little bit more, so that maybe in the next time we talk or the next time they're thinking about this, they won't use that particular reason anymore to support their belief. And that alone will make them that much more rational, because one, they're able to use skepticism to filter out bad reasons for believing some things and keeping good, and hopefully they can use that same mechanism to determine what other reasons they have and whether they're good or bad or not. So like if someone came to me and said, hey, I believe in God because without the Bible, a community will completely fall apart due to stealing and terrible things that they'll do to other people, murdering, violence against women, there'll be all sorts of chaos that will occur if it wasn't for the Bible. And that's proof that it was written by a God, and that's proof of God existing. And then if I said, hey, if I can show you to your satisfaction evidence of communities and cultures that didn't have the Bible and were totally fine, didn't have stealing, didn't have murder, didn't have any violence against, or limited of everything, and were able to support, would that support your claim? Or would you still use that reason to continue to believe in your God, or would you be less confident in supporting your beliefs with that particular reason? And if we can have a conversation, and that's my goal, and we can ultimately get that, if I can ultimately highlight that reason that they believe in God is kind of faulty, maybe they can look at it the next time they're, and the next time we have a conversation, or the next time someone positions them and tells them what's the best reason they believe in God, maybe they'll come up with a different reason that they believe in God. But they'll at least realize that last one that they had, the one that they told me, was incorrect or was fallible. And that's useful. Because now they come to an understanding. They may not reach the same conclusion, but they are able to use a mechanism of skepticism to filter out bad reasoning. And if you give them time, and if they're willing to be honest with themselves, they can apply that same reasoning to any other belief that they have, that any other criteria, or that can use that criteria for any kind of belief that they have, and come to a really good position where they're able to filter out bad reasoning from good reasoning, and then we can honestly see where that goes. And they may ultimately determine for good reasons that a God exists. And if that's the case, I want to hear it. I have to be open to that as well. But that's the great thing about just having a realistic goal and not getting to yourself into a frustrated position where you think you're right and you want them to come to you. What you really want them to do is just be honest and use good mechanisms for determining good reasons, and being a person that's open to hearing them, as well as, you know, helping them filter out themselves, but not trying to guide them to any kind of conclusion yourself. I think we're confident as atheists, but I also think we need to remember that our position isn't, you know, that we know that there's no God. Our position is we don't have good evidence, and we're looking for it. And until then, we don't have a reason to believe. And that's where our position is. So if you want to look for a good reason to believe, go for it. But if you tell me bad reasons, I'll at least help you figure out why they're bad. And then we can continue to work together. And that's the goal that I think will keep us less frustrated in the end.
Oh, no, I was going to say that I've always found that you don't want to attack God as anything, because that's a no-win.
Like a ruthless monster or something?
Right. Yeah, because there's no evidence for or against, and so you might as well not even go that route. I've always learned that if you can attack the person's, say, a faith, and if you can hit that with some type of doubt, such as, you know, how do you know this? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it is they don't know it, and they say, well, I don't know it, but this is what I believe. And it's kind of like, you know, you accepting something that you don't know, and it's just, it's irrational to even go that route. So I think if you could punch holes in the faith, I think it's kind of like a way of, kind of leaving a seed, and it just kind of grows.
Sure.
And what you make a good point is, we make a good point about that is something I'm always constantly getting in a rut myself. Maybe others might as well. we've been through the arguments, we've had the conversations. What most people who are former religious having escaped that have been through all things. There's been a lot of turmoil. I've had all these conversations with the people. And so it becomes very tempting to not ask the questions and just assert and say, okay, look, you're saying all these things, I've heard these before, now let me tell you blah, 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 blah. As I often get crap doing in, but by foregoing the Socratic method, we're really, I think, shooting ourselves in the foot by basically not engaging the very things that helped us probably engage. Uh-huh. So, but it becomes tempting to not do that and just say, okay, I've heard all that, now let me tell you.
Right. But it's hard to do.
Yeah.
That's true. We're getting down to the bottom of the hour. You have anything to say before we get there? Maybe open the topic for when we get back. Something you'd like to, Wombat, that you'd like to talk about first when we get back after, of course, after I introduce the different atheist societies here in Knoxville.
Don't play Big Butter Jesus.
Sorry, what was that?
Don't play Big Butter Jesus. That's my only.
Oh, okay. Request. You want me to play Big Butter Jesus? Okay.
No!
Okay. Well, we're going to take about a 5-minute break here, maybe a 3 or 4. And we're going to play a song and talk about the different organizations here, the free thought organizations that we have here in Knoxville. And we'll be back in just a minute. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live here in Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine all.
Bozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Daughter 5, and we have Rib with us. Have Chris and Jen. Welcome, Chris and Jen.
Hey.
And the Wombat. Can you hear us, Wombat?
The Wombat!
And let me talk just a little bit about the groups that we have here in Knoxville. These are atheist, rationalist, free thought groups that exist here in Knoxville. There's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. It now has 670 members or so. You can find it online at knoxvilleatheist.org. And you can join them at their meetup near Westtown Mall. That is at Flats and Taps at near Westtown on Kingston Pike. They meet for happy hour for food every Tuesday at around 5:30 or so, and usually go till about 8. Everybody's welcome as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Apologies, Matt Dillahunty. Then there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for almost 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays on the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's pretty complicated, you could just go and follow the signs. Or you can go to the website at rationalists.org and click on directions. There's also Sunday Assembly, which is an assembly that started in England just a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who have had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They meet at the International Building downtown near the fairgrounds on the fourth Sunday of every month, just one Sunday a month, so they won't overdo it. There's the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Those nice people in Madison, Wisconsin, which work so hard to preserve our separation of church and state, go to lawsuits when they have to do that. They have a local chapter. It was opened only about 6 months ago or so. They meet at the third Wednesday of every month at the Earth Fair at Turkey Creek. That's at 7 o'clock on the third Wednesday of every month. And there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs that give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement and find secular companionship in the Bible Belt. By the way, if you have a community event and would like to make a public announcement, have it made on WOZO Radio, all you have to do is create an MP3 to reflect that event and then contact us via our website, that's WOZO Radio, to which arrange for it to be played in our rotation. Just make an MP3 and send it in. Now, we're back to our regular show. Like I say, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And Wombat, would you like to get us back into our subject?
Sure. The topic of the show is frustration, specifically how to avoid frustrating talks with believers if you are a non-believer. And we found, or we discussed in the first half, one of the best ways of avoiding frustration is to set up realistic goals before you have a conversation with someone. If your goal is to completely change their point of view and have them convert and live a world of rationality and logic at the end of a 5-minute chat, you're going to lead yourself towards frustrating conversations. Sometimes the best way to get over frustration is to set up a realistic goal, and sometimes the best realistic goal, specifically between a non-believer and a believer, is to have the opportunity, or to give them the opportunity, to just have a moment where they can question their belief and be a bit more thoughtful about the reasons they believe things to be true. And if you can just have that one little moment and walk away, that's a huge step forward, because you're doing them a great massive benefit, and you're also learning on your own terms how to better approach believers and how to get them to consider what they believe to be true. That was what we discussed in the first half. This half, I want to talk about the concept of not leaving people behind. And I was watching a seminar where there was a guy who was showing that Neil deGrasse Tyson clip that I showed you, and he was talking about how we need to find better means of approaching people who are believers and talking to them as non-believers. And he also discussed the concept of not leaving people behind. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, when he wasn't able to convince his friend that people had landed on the moon, basically gave up on that person. He says, I give up on that person. I don't want to deal with him anymore. And so the speaker at the time who was talking about that clip said that we shouldn't get in the habit of leaving people behind, because there was a good opportunity there for a more introspective look at why that person didn't believe that people landed on the moon when presented with evidence. He suggested that Neil deGrasse Tyson could have said, hey, it looks like your reasoning is not evidence-based. There's something else here. Could we talk about that for a little bit? And that's an invitation to have a conversation about why someone believes something and how confident they are that that thing is actually better truth than an evidence-based position, or maybe one that's based on logic or rationality. Anyway, the main point is, by not giving up on that person and having a different kind of conversation, by just transitioning to a different conversation, you could have a more substantial and a more productive talk with a person who is a believer or someone who is convinced of something that may not necessarily be for the best reasons. The analogy that he brought up was similar to seeing a person who's drowning in a lake, and you throw out a rope to that person. The person grabs on, and they're struggling, and they're trying to pull their way back, or maybe they're trying to just fight with the water. And after a certain point, if you give up on them, you just throw your end of the rope into the lake. And that's kind of the position that we can be in when we give up on someone. We can just literally throw our end of the rope into the water. And that's something we should try to avoid. Instead, we should be a bit more patient. And we should be hopeful that if we can at least give a good tug on the rope, they can at least find, with the momentum that we gave them, their own ability to get to the shore. What do you guys think?
Well, I see that basically example given, that analogy, and not to sound like a broken record, but I hear it sound so many oftentimes of basically insert religion is the rope, is the raft, and you're drowning in your sea of sin. And so when that situation goes up, I try to reverse it and say, well, what if you're swimming in the sea of, say, Christianity, that seems to be pertinent, and someone from someone of Hindu faith comes along and tries to extend the same situation? We're under this problem where, well, crap, they're using the same argument against me, but at the same time, I think they're wrong, but I think I'm right, and I want to convince them. So you had this tug-of-war of pulling onto the boat and onto the water, and then back-and-forth assertions, and then before you know it, it's just assertions, rather than getting back to asking questions. And how do you know? You read it in a book, great, but how do you know that? And how do you know that? And I had something there.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I understand that side of it, of there may not be evidence of a afterlife or a God, but some people they just want to have that a faith, and I've had that too, and especially after when I got engaged, I realized that I know that we're going to die and pass away, and I know that that's the end. But there's always a part of me that hopes that there is a afterlife or something, so I don't have to part from a person that I a family member or a wife that you've fallen in love with. So I understand that side of it. However, when you approach them, I've learned that it's not what you have that are different. It's what you have that are I think it's things that you have in common, and I think that you have more things in common than you don't, and I think that if you can come together on that, then you can organize and in that way be a better person to each other.
One of the things I've addressed this many times myself or heard it, that I believe, because it gives me hope. Well, I even made a meme and put it on the internet saying, fine, have hope. There's no reason not to have hope. You can hope as a secular person. You can hope no matter what religion you are, or non-religion. You can hope that there's life after death. The thing about it is, if you buy into like Christianity, then you've got to worry about heaven and hell. You've got to worry. I mean, your hope is buttressed, I guess, or not buttressed, but inflamed. It's corroded by this other anguish that you've got to worry about. There's no reason you can't hope for an afterlife and hope that it's a good one. Heck, hope for the best one possible.
Don't include
hell. What'd you say, Rip?
Egyptian one's not too bad at all.
Yeah.
As long as you were a decent person.
Right. If you're a decent person.
Valhalla.
Right. They weigh your soul, and if it comes up okay against the feather, you're in, and you have a good afterlife. But yeah, that's fine. There's nothing precluding you from having hope even if you do leave your religion behind. It also makes it easier to have a hope for a good afterlife.
Trial.
Life without having to worry about hell. Wombat, what do you think about that?
I want to hear from Jen. She's been there all day.
I want to hear from Jen.
Say hi, Jen.
Hey, how you doing?
What do you think about what I just said?
I think that it's great. But when I talk to people, I find that people are generally driven by fear, because that's the root cause of why these discussions come up and why they believe in a religion or a hell.
Right. It's not really the hope that's driving them. It's
fear.
The fear. Yeah. The way I've heard it is, it's the fear of hell that keeps the butts in the pews, as it were.
Yeah. And they need money.
Pass those plates.
Pass the plate.
Yeah, you'll have to get close to the mic.
Oh, sorry.
I've got them turned down so that we can get a little bit of feedback through the radio speakers, and I don't want to get feedback too. But anyway, I agree with you that we need to talk to them about this. We need to address their fears and their hopes and their worries about the afterlife. Let's get back to what you were talking about, the guy with the moon. The moon landing thing. I don't really think that that's a real good example. I think that Neil deGrasse Tyson could have picked a better one. And the reason I say that is that he may very well be using a fact-based reasoning to not believe in the moon landing. Because if you ask them to explain, you know, why they think that the moon landing didn't come up, happen, they will point to videos, they will point to pictures, all of which I'm sure that Neil deGrasse Tyson could debunk. But they have been educated in the wrong direction on this. They have their reasoning has been dropped to such a level where they're accepting things without knowledge of those things. And Neil deGrasse Tyson could have elucidated on that and probably told him why the flag was waving, you know, and why dust is being kicked up and why you don't see stars in the sky, which is some of these arguments that the moon landing deniers will bring up. But there's good reasons for those things, and he could address each one of those in turn. He doesn't have to give up on the guy. But to say fact he is not using fact-based reasoning may not be to the point in this case. He's just got his facts wrong.
Okay. So I hear you completely. Just to address the comments in the room, for Chris's comment, I think absolutely highlighting the things that we share in common is a really big core part with empathetically connecting with someone and having a really good conversation with them, especially if you're trying to convince them of your, or at least not convince, but show them your point of view on that's counter to theirs or has a very stark contrast to what they hold to be true. It's a good way to show that there is commonality between you two, and that's a good foundation for a good relationship, even if it's as short as a conversation that you have with someone. And I think on that part, both people
as a commonality, want to believe in things that are true. And it's a good marker for, hey, if you want to believe in true things and I want to believe in true things, what's the best method that we have to do that? And that's a good avenue for discussing, hey, if you're using faith to determine things that are true, and we established before that maybe we thought science was a better way of determining what's true and what's not true, and science doesn't have any comments on God, shouldn't that be like a weird thing? And why are we not using science to determine, you know, the existence of God, if possible? Why are we not using our best methods to determine fact from fiction? And why are we relying on faith, which seems to have the ability to be applied to any God? We both agree that there are several people around the world that might believe in a different God than you, so, or at least a lot more than several. So, and they're using faith.
It's easy to say, how come you're not using any type of scientific methods to determine what's real, what's false? When look at our education system, I mean, look at what's happening in a lot of our homes. People aren't learning critical thinking skills.
I mean, right. Exactly.
It's easy to say that, but I mean, look at what people are given to work with. And fortunately, I know a lot of people, and a lot of them happen to be atheists, that decided that, you know, these explanations aren't enough for us. We have to dig deeper. We have to go by what we can see and what science tells us. But that's not how the average person thinks.
And many times they actually denigrate science. In the home, they tell them the science can't know anything. As soon as you bring up the word science, they turn off.
Eyes glaze over.
Yeah. Good, right. Yeah, that's so I can hear that.
So what you would do in this case, you would ask is, hey, if you guys have why do you believe this? And they say faith. What you then go for is by talking about their faith. Ask them to, what does that word mean to you? I would love to know what that means. And let them define faith on their own terms. If they invite science into the conversation, then you can talk about science. But if they want to talk about faith, deal with that thing that they're talking about, because their faith, how they see it, is the foundation of that. That's the thing that you want to talk about. That's the core thing that you want to discuss. You don't want to bring up better alternatives. But if you're having a conversation where science was brought up ahead of time, you can bring that in. Go ahead.
Then they offer to pray for you, and I always say, pray or prey?
Also on that note of basically knowing, science can't know things, right? Something, I tend to get that kind of reciprocation of, and there's also, okay, so people often, I think, juxtapose the pursuit of knowledge with the obsession with knowing, with asserting that they can know everything. People, theists especially, so quickly juxtapose these together, and they completely dismiss the humility of the truly the scientific method of, yes, all this can be unturned if you show me how it is undone, but none of that shows up. And when you do find someone, they get a Nobel Prize for it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it really is a self-correcting process, but people so quickly just think that they put the two together and think that, oh, you want to know everything. No, I'm not saying that. I'm following evidence that they don't. That's the frustration.
Right. But one of the frustrations I have is that you talk to a non-believer and the first thing they come at you with, well, where did the universe come from? Where did the Earth come from? You know, they could be talking to a plumber who's an atheist and expect them to know where the universe came from. You know, if you're not a physicist or at least haven't studied the physics behind it, there's no way that you could explain even what we know about it. And if it gets right down to it, even the physicists don't know where the matter in the universe came from or what caused the Big Bang to actually happen. We can only go back so far. We can go back really far, but we can't go all the way back to the beginning itself. And we don't claim to. Their answer for that is, I don't know, and there's nothing wrong with that answer. But they expect, since they can claim to know, they expect us to be claiming to know.
Right. Subconscious projection.
Sure. But the question is, I mean, even though they can't claim to, neither one of us can claim to know, you could also know that there, you could also tell them there's several things that we didn't have answers to, but eventually we got answers, mm-hmm. and this could be one of those things.
Where the sun
went at night. You don't just take the lazy way out. Just say, I don't know, so
God did it. Yeah. You know?
Sure. But you guys, we run into a trap where we are falling in love with the concept of explaining what we're aware of and what our position is. But when we're having a conversation with someone who's particularly a believer that we have engaged yet, but we want to have them as a goal of the conversation, question their belief, we need to be more focused on why they believe things rather than explaining why we believe things. And
happens if you end up just being on the receiving end of a sermon?
So here's a great point. If they want to have that, you don't have to have that conversation. A conversation is a two-person conversation or a two-person action. And the goal is, can I get this person to think about their beliefs? If you can't, you can walk away. And that was a part of the one of the goals that we want to talk about in the second break. There are points when you would totally be okay with walking away with a person. In general, we say don't give up on the person in general, like don't give up on people. But on a person-to-person basis, if someone talks to you and says, hey, I need my faith or I might become violent. I need my faith because it's the only grip I have on reality. Or I need my faith, I literally can't function without it and I might be harmful to other people. Or I don't want to have a conversation with beliefs with you. I do not want to participate in this. Please leave me alone. These are times when you can walk away from the conversation. It's totally fine. When you have the opportunity to, and they're willing, you should be happy to discuss things with them. And there's a strategy behind it, or there's a method behind talking to people when you really want to get to their faith and why they use faith as a means to believe what they have. And if they're throwing at you, I can finish up. If they're throwing at you, hey, I believe in the universe because of XYZ, or how did the universe come? How did the whales come? I can say, hey, you know, I have this conversation a lot with a lot of different people. Some of them are from different faiths, and they came to me with this answer for why they believe in God. And if you were to come up with me and they were to come up with me, what method could I use to determine which of you two are right as an independent party? That automatically gets them in the position where they're already beginning to rationalize the answers. You're not confronting them with facts. You're giving them the opportunity to rationalize why they believe things. And that's the goal of the conversation, and that's how you avoid getting frustrated.
Yeah, but getting back to your analogy of throwing the rope to them, they've got to at least reach for the rope. You know, you're talking about giving up on them. If they won't even reach for the rope, if they won't even engage you, then there's nothing much you can do but walk away from them.
So on a person-to-person basis, you're free to walk away. But in general, don't get in the habit of giving up on people. Don't give up on people. Be willing to have that conversation when they're willing to have it. Be willing to have it when there's no harm that could occur after the conversation. Be willing to have it when they're willing to engage with you and be honest, and or at least attempt to be honest. Those are the best kinds of conversations that lead to no frustration.
Right.
So set realistic goals and engage only when the person you're talking to is also willing to engage with you. And it can be a healthy dialogue because there are opportunities for it. I've had it multiple times here in Lexington and in the heart of Kentucky. I think it's worthwhile to at least be open to it and to set realistic goals and conversations so that you don't walk away frustrated either.
Well, I want to kind of ask a question on that since you had a lot of experience in that you're talking about and everyone else as well. So it seems to be common in the situation that you have a conversation with someone who believes any one or multiple, you know, religious claims, and trying to have that kind of just inquisitive, non-assumptuous approach and ask, well, can you explain this briefly? Or what about this? Or what about that? Dr. Five, you just mentioned a moment ago that someone mentioned that so often you won't get just an answer. You'll get a half-hour sermon.
Right.
And because mm-hmm. some people myself have a problem with seeing where to stop people and where to carry the conversation, it'll be very unproductive. An hour will go by, I would have asked maybe two or three questions, and I'll just get a whole bunch of 30 years worth of circular indoctrination. And it's just, how do you deal with that, I guess? I might have already mentioned it. But.
Sure. So I knew a person who believed that they could travel in their sleep to actual physical locations. And this was not a person at my job, but it was at a party, and she was married to one of the people, the scientists that we worked with. And I thought it was a fascinating conversation, but every single time I tried to get to the root of her belief, like, so, you know, could you explain about your, like, dream traveling things? She would start a long story that I initially didn't want to, like, sit through, because the ultimate core was trying to understand why she believed that to be the case in the first place. So you can have it's totally fine to be, you know, if you can't get a meaningful conversation out of someone, and a conversation takes two people, then you're free to either excuse yourself or just say, hey, you know, I don't need any more examples of why you think that's true. I'd really like to hear more why you believe XYZ instead. Or can we try to guide you?
In a case like that, it's pretty easy to test. You just ask them to go to a particular place, and you go there, and you put up some signs, and then the next morning you ask them what the sign said. You know, no big deal. But we've got down to like 1 minute in the show before I do the outro. Any last thoughts? Any comments?
Sure. One of the best ways to avoid frustrating talks with believers is to set up a realistic goal. Some of the best goals that you can set up is just give them a moment to have an introspective moment about why they believe certain things. And then if they don't want to have the conversation with you, if they think they'll get derived harm from it, or if they are not willing to have a back and forth or a two-person conversation like an adult, you don't have to force it. But in general, don't give up on people. Be willing to have them conversations when the opportunity rises and when the other person is willing to have it with you.
Okay, very good. Riv?
Yeah, just the usual. Be well, do good, and think critically.
Last words?
Have empathy for those who are living in fear and in religion, and try to find common ground.
And Chris?
No, I just want to say, just pick one item of argument and keep and hold them to that argument.
Okay. And as usual, this is Doubter 5 leaving you with, don't sweat it. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. The time to sweat it is when we prove that souls are real. Talk to you next week, 6 o'clock on this station, and we'll see you then.
I like that.
Bye!
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply